All right, well, welcome. It is 9:30, and we will start this meeting. First of all, we will check our phone lines. Mary Loans with Mid-Continent, are you on the line? Mary? Oh, okay, the next one. Okay. And is that true with Deb Kutsunas?
Yes, this is Debbie Kutsunas from Mid-American Energy Company.
Okay, Melinda Lovis?
Yes.
Jennifer Moore?
Yes.
Tammy Aberle.
Yes, Commissioner.
Thank you. Andrew Isar. Andrew? Okay. Julie Dishman?
Yes, good morning.
Thank you. Mary Sisick, are you on the line?
Present.
Okay. Tal Rozoric, are you on the line?
I am, Commissioner.
Thank you. Colleen Sebald.
Yes, I'm here, Mr. Commissioner.
And George Thompson. George with Quest, George Thompson. Okay. Andrew Isar? No. Okay, so we're still waiting for anyone else on the line that I have not mentioned or called out your name. All right, good. It is 9:30 on November 12, 2008. I am Steve Kolbeck, a commissioner with the PUC. Joined today with me is Commissioner Dusty Johnson and Gary Hansen. First on the agenda is to approve the minutes of the commission meeting held on July 8th, July 29th, August 12th, September 9th, September 23rd, and October 7th, all of 2008. And approval of the minutes of the ad hoc commission meetings held on August 6th and August 28th of 2008. Any discussion? And a motion?
Go for approval.
All right. Commissioner Johnson?
Aye.
Commissioner Hansen?
Aye.
And I vote aye also. Next on the agenda is consumer reports. We'll have a status report from Deb Graydon.
Thank you, Commissioner Kolbeck. The commission has received a total of 158 contacts since the last report was prepared for the October 21st, 2008 commission meeting. 38 of the contacts involved telecommunication services, 41 contacts involved electrical services, 17 contacts involved natural gas service, 2 contacts involved electrical and natural gas service, 9 contacts involved cell phone service, 23 related to the Do Not Call registry, 1 contact involved wind energy, 1 contact involved the Keystone Pipeline, and 26 contacts related to issues not regulated by the PUC. 2,148 of the 2,213 complaints received in 2008 have been resolved, and 2,328 of the 2,337 complaints received in 2007 have been resolved.
All right, any questions for Ms. Grid? Nothing? Okay, as we stated earlier, we will move the consumer complaints to the end of the docket. That is posted to begin at 10:30, and we will not begin that hearing until 10:30 this evening.
That was posted at 10:30 or after the commission meeting. Was it whatever was first or whatever was...
Whichever was later.
Gotcha.
So there would be a time certain we wanted to have.
Perfect, thanks.
10:30 this morning, correct?
Yes, correct.
Yep.
All right, so that moves us to the electric part of our agenda, and we will start with EL08-031 in the matter of an application by Buffalo Ridge 2, LLC, a subsidiary of Iberdrola Renewables. They have a proposed wind farm that would have a nameplate capacity of up to 306 megawatts. The question today is, shall the commission assess a filing fee not to exceed $250,000 with an initial deposit of $8,000? First, I will turn to staff.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. Just seeking to set the deposit, which I believe the applicant has already left with the office, so I believe they're in agreement with the initial $8,000 filing. Just administrative at this point. Thank you.
All right. Now, Mr. Kennecke.
Good morning, commissioners and staff. Brett Kennecke for the Buffalo Ridge 2 filing. We are pleased to finally make that filing with the commission after working on it through the fall. And I did file the $8,000 filing fee at the time I brought the application up. We would look forward to the docket moving forward. And, glad to have your consideration on it. Thanks.
Well, we're We're very, very, very glad you're sitting in front of us today. Are there any questions by commissioners?
I have one, if I may. As long as we have all of the participants here, there's been a little bit of confusion, at least from our side, at least my side, as looking at the amount that is supposed to be assessed and what the maximums are and things of that nature. Is there some clarification in the statute that needs to take place here?
Mr. Commissioner, this is Kara Semler. The staff working on this docket would argue, yes, there should be some clarification to the statute. The way the statute is written, and we calculated the maximum based on the exact language of the statute, there is no some type of language. I can find it here, and so I can read the exact language. But we believe the and in the statute for the calculating the maximum is in line with the $250,000. However, that's not how the commission has read the statute in the past, and we just feel confident that we won't approach that number in any way. So I believe the $250,000 is adequate. However, if we need to go back and raise that $250,000, we certainly can. But should I pull out the exact statutory language so we can...
I'm not concerned so much as attempting to get the semantics correct just right now. I'm just wondering if there was confusion. And since you and I cannot chat on these things, and I can't chat on them with Mr. Kennecke prior to getting into this meeting, there seemed to be, and certainly it can be read in a number of fashions, and I just wanted to see whether, if everyone thinks that there's a need to just clarify this language, then that's something that we should prepare for in the legislative session, just to make sure that we have it too. It's a minor detail, but this is really the only opportunity we have to at least have everybody express an opinion on it.
Commissioner, this is Brett Kennecke. I don't have an opinion on the language, but what I do have an opinion on is the what I consider to be very efficient manner in which the commission bills my clients on these matters for the expenses that the commission incurs. It's a system that works well. I've never had any complaint that the commission has overbilled or overcharged or overdone what they've had to, or the expenses that the commission staff has incurred in these matters, and have nothing but good things to say about how the system is working.
Great. Thank you very much. Thank you, Commissioner.
I might have one observation. I'll just let you guys know that, for example, in the last few years we've had three three projects where the total project cost exceeds the $100 million. And in all of those cases, the commission has read this language to mean that the maximum fee is 0.25% of the first $100 million plus the 0.125% of all remaining dollars. And I'll just let you know, for example, with some of the projects we've had, we've needed every penny of that. I'll tell you that. With Big Stone, with TransCanada, we needed that additional money. We had a tough time squeezing it in as it was. And so I think that's what the language is meant to mean, although it's poorly written. And my reasoning is, if it doesn't mean that, that means that you can read the statute either one of two ways. You can either read it as it can't exceed either of those values. The absurdity of that is then it renders the first half meaningless. It means the only thing that applies is the second half. Or if you wanted to read it slightly differently, you could read it as we go up to the $100 million, the $250 million, and then you have nothing. You have no additional fee at all until you exceed $500 million. That's just the way the math works.
Can I see your statute book, Mr. Schmidt? You know, I would agree with everything that's been said. You know, most specifically the part about, listen, $250,000 is almost certainly going to be plenty of money to be able to conduct a siting case for a wind farm. I just do think, I don't want to say have a say today. The statute means one thing if we really think it means something different. So, I mean, I don't want to get into a big discussion, but I at least want to take a look at what I'm... Ms. Semler, maybe you could kind of walk us through... you referred to some specific wording earlier.
Yeah, we're looking at SDCL 4941B12. Mm-hmm. And the last sentence of the first paragraph, beginning with the maximum fee chargeable, may not exceed X. And may not exceed X. If we put a diagram to that, if X cannot be greater than 3, and if X cannot be greater than 5, X can only be 1 or 2.
You know, if you read that, though, if that's what the statute means, this is John Smith,
yeah,
you know what it means is your fee is a maximum of $8,000 until you hit $500 million in projects.
And I understand that sensical reading of the statute, but just, you know, the staff assigned to it read it very literally, and that's what it meant to us. And we felt comfortable with that, being as we don't believe we're going to exceed the $250,000 need. The statute simply doesn't say the sum of. There's a comma and.
Well, or even one very minor language change that I think would make it a lot clearer is if it just said, if it used the word on instead of.
Well, like I said, I'm not interested in perhaps going through all the semantics of this meeting. Excuse me, Chairman Colbeck, if I could. My interest is just simply in making certain that if there's some ambiguity here, that it is clarified in the statute, and we have that opportunity, of course, in this legislative session. But I think that our standard operating procedure is still being followed here, and there's no potential for harm in proceeding the way we are.
Well, Chairman Hansen, I think you're right. The thing that makes me nervous is this is a bit of a departure from our standard operating procedure on these large projects. The number would be higher than $250,000 if we were doing this the way we had done it with at least Keystone and Big Stone 2. Is that right, Ms. Semler?
Correct, but I do believe at this time you'd be putting a maximum at $250,000. However, if we need to increase that, staff could always come before the commission and simply ask that it be increased per your prior interpretation of the statute. So.
Right, and I think that's correct. The statute does not require you to set that fee at that. It just limits you to what you can do. So as a discretionary matter, you're not obligated to, right now, set the fee at the statutory maximum. And I would just say that based on past history, we don't even approach spending that kind of money on wind-related siting cases. When we get into things like Keystone, that kind of thing, where we're talking very, very contentious and highly technical stuff, it costs a lot of money, you know, to hire consultants and all that, but we usually don't have those kind of issues with a wind project.
Well, and this is Commissioner Colbeck, I guess my concern is that Keystone, if they were to ever come before us again, would they be able to say, well, you didn't access that for other projects? I realize the differentiation could be wind and petroleum, but
I know what my argument will be.
Okay.
That was
kind of my question, too.
It wouldn't hurt to clarify the language. It's not the most clearly written thing in the world. I would have to concur with that.
Okay.
Well, I think Chairman Hansen has been trying to get at the real issue, which is let's clean up the language for the future. I mean, Ms. Wiest, is there any problem with cleaning that up?
I don't anticipate any problems.
Is that where you're headed?
As long as we had all of the parties together here, at least parties from different sides, and for the masses of millions of people that are no doubt listening in, who don't understand that the PUC is trifurcated from the standpoint of we cannot chat with, for instance, Ms. Semler on on an issue that's on a docketed issue, because she's basically representing citizens here, and we're, even though we're representing citizens, we have to stand back away from the separation of the parties here. So as long as we have all these parties in an open meeting, we have that opportunity to ask that question, which we cannot really ask otherwise. And that's all I wanted to do, was at least have a short dialogue, find out whether there was confusion or whether it was just me that had some confusion and ambiguity. And apparently we can all agree that there's a little bit of a change that's needed, and it'll make life better for all of us.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner. We're going to ask you to speak up just a little bit. So any other comments? Motion.
I would move that the commission assess a filing fee not to exceed $200,000 with an initial deposit of $8,000, just to make it very clear that $200,000 isn't based on anything but an arbitrary number in my head.
All right. Discussion. All right. Hearing none, Commissioner Johnson.
Aye.
Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
And I will vote aye also.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Kennedy.
I got to say, I was a little bit worried about losing a filing fee question.
Oh, we'll always take the money.
All right, under gas and electric, item number one, GE08-001, in the matter of the filing by Mid-American Energy Company for approval of a revised residential and commercial information booklet. Mid-American is submitting a single welcome booklet, which will replace separate residential and commercial pamphlets previously used. Mid-American requests an approval date of October 21, 2008. The question before the commission today is, shall the commission approve the revised customer information booklet? Mid-American Energy.
Thank you, Commissioner. This is Debbie Katsunis from Mid-American Energy Company, and we did submit the revised booklet. We believe that it provides additional information for our customers, and we're happy to answer any questions that you might have for us today.
Okay, thank you. Staff? Yeah, all right.
Thank you, Commissioner. Mid-American Energy filed its new customer information welcome booklet pursuant to South Dakota Administrative Rule 2010-1602. Mid-American is submitting a single welcome booklet, which will replace separate residential and commercial pamphlets previously used. Staff recommended that Mid-American add a section which provides contact information for customers with billing questions or disputes, which can now be found on the bottom of page 11. The company has met the requirements for the customer information filing. Staff recommends approval of the booklet as revised.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Thurber. Any commissioner questions on this action?
What the effective date in the past for Mid-American?
We actually requested that approval date at the time we made the filing. There is not a requirement to have a retroactive effective date.
So if we just, if it was effective when the order was issued, that'd be fine. Wouldn't cause any problems for Mid-American?
That is correct.
Okay, thanks.
Any further questions? A motion?
I will move to approve the revised customer information booklet.
All right. Discussion.
I mean, it's a really neat product. I mean, we shouldn't vote on it without saying that. It's a good product, and kudos to Mid-American.
Well, and that's very true, that this is meant to streamline and help the customer. The end result is to have one place to go to for residential and commercial. I think it will hopefully be a good product and aid customers in the future.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? Any none? Commissioner Johnson.
Aye.
Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
And I'll vote aye also. The next item, pipeline safety. Item number one is PS07-001 in the matter of a filing by Montana Dakota Utilities Company, a division of MDU Resources Group, for approval of a waiver. This waiver would apply to exposed natural gas pipelines according to Part 192-479. The question today is, shall the commission approve the waiver? First of all, Montana Dakota, we'll turn to you.
Good morning, Mr. Commissioners and staff. This is Scott Besmer, staff engineer at Montana Dakota Utilities. The waiver that you're requesting, we have no concerns with the recommendations on the conditions that were suggested by Mr. Bettman.
Okay. And then we'll turn to staff. Nathan?
Thank you, Commissioner. This is Nathan Solomon with staff. The history of this docket is that some additional information had been requested by the commission when it was last looked at, and that had been submitted. Staff has reviewed that additional information, and we still feel comfortable that pipeline safety is not compromised if this docket is approved. So we recommend that the commission grant MDU's request subject to the conditions in Mr. Bettman's recommendation by approving a partial waiver of 49-34B-3, which adopts 49 CFR 192-481A regarding the frequency of atmospheric corrosion inspection, conditioned, however, on PHMSA's review and consent.
Thank you very much. Commissioner, questions on this item?
Mr. Chairman, if I could.
Absolutely.
Thanks. You know, I thought this information was helpful, particularly in Mr. Davis's testimony, but, you know, he always talks about average corrosion rate, and I guess a question for either Mr. Solomon or for MDU, how much variance is there? I mean, my presumption is that corrosion rates are constant. Is that right? And if that's the case, could a particularly bad four-year time period create a corrosion rate so dramatic as to not be in the public interest to allow this waiver?
This is Scott with MDU again. We're dealing with average corrosion rates in South Dakota. If there is an area that we've have a concern of an accelerated corrosion rate, that's actually covered in one of Mr. Bettman's recommendations, and that's labeled as a hot spot, and we will mitigate that in a different fashion than the extending that survey. That will be looked at more frequently than the 3 or 4 year survey rate. Those will be identified, and they will be given to staff.
Well, but I think Mr. Bettman's talking about things like with, you know, with road salt, and I understand those hot spots. I guess what I'm talking about is just in naturally occurring. I mean, do we see the corrosion out in the real world, absent any you know, road salt and those sort of things? Do we see much variance in corrosion rates?
No.
Mr. Solomon, that's your experience as well?
I would concur with that. And if you look at the instances of atmospheric corrosion that MDU provided in that additional information, I think that supports that.
See, and I wasn't sure about that. I mean, when I look at, you know, and granted, it was a very low number, but what that table doesn't tell you is what would be the delta, what would be the difference between checking every 4 years as opposed to checking every 3. I mean, is that year between 3 and 4, is that going to make a difference? And a chart like that just can't tell you that.
That chart would be exactly the same on a 4 year rotation. There is no difference between that. We do not experience atmospheric corrosion in this upper parts of the United States. So even to go to a 5 or 6 year, year tables are not going to change any because of the average corrosion rate as discussed in Mr. Davis's testimony.
Mr. Solomon, did the original staff opinion was written by Mr. Bettman. Do you have anything to add to that?
I guess what I would add is the data that we have is the average corrosion rate, and if you look from the Midwest, that's in Mr. Davis's testimony, and the most severe of that is 3.3, which I don't think we experience, 3.3 mils per year, which we don't experience in South Dakota, and even at that rate, it's 24 years to get to 70% of the loss of a 3/4 inch pipeline wall thickness. So I don't feel that going from 3 years to 4 years is going to compromise pipeline safety. Now, obviously, there could be an occasional instance where there's an exception to that, but I just think the risk is pretty small.
Okay, thank you very much.
Any other? Mr. Rizzo.
This is Greg Ruskin speaking. Getting back to that average, 24 years to, I guess, get to 70% of the pipeline wall, does that include hot spots, or does that only apply to non-hot spots, if I coin a phrase? Would they all be averaged in to the 24 years?
Yeah, that was used in the average.
So then the spots that, I don't have a better term, that would be coined non-hot spots, the experience would be longer than 24 years, I take it then.
Right, if you'd factored out the hot spots out of that average, that would extend that quite sufficiently.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. Any other questions? I guess I just have one. Could you remind me again? I believe it was to get the rotation corrected again, but could you remind me again why you wanted to go from 3 to 4?
Right now we have to perform leak surveys, and by DOT code, that leak survey is supposed to be on a 5-year rotation. Currently MDU does that on a 4-year rotation. We just wanted to coincide the atmospheric corrosion survey with that leak survey. That's why we went to 4 years here.
Yeah, basically, we'll put your inspection rotation on the same year.
Right, we use the same tech at the same time, so we're taking care of two survey intervals at the same time.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Commissioner Johnson again. So help me understand how MDU would identify these hot spots, you know, whether it's chemicals in the air or road salt. How would those come to your attention?
They would come up in the atmospheric corrosion survey. We would see that active corrosion. We would, after identifying it in the survey, do follow-up surveys to determine if it is a hot spot or if it was just a certain condition, like, say, road salt, and we've mitigated that road salt. You know, we would deem it as a hot spot at the time, do follow-up surveys on a yearly basis after we've mitigated the road salt and determined that the hot spot no longer exists.
So a hot spot would only be identified after a 4-year gap between surveys. Is that right?
Well, yes, unless we had for other reasons to be in that area and see that. I mean, it could be identified outside of that atmospheric corrosion survey by other operations that bring us to that area.
This is Nathan Sullivan with staff. Mr. Besmer, don't you already have a good history of that for most of your system based on what the work that's been done so far?
Yes, we know where we have atmospheric corrosion problems, yes. They're very few, and they've been mitigated, so.
Hold on here. Mr. Johnson's getting another, getting his facts.
I could, maybe, Nathan, maybe you want to address. There is at least a category, and I didn't dig out my condition here, but that attempts to define certain other areas that automatically are treated with greater vigilance.
Would you like me to review Mr. Bettman's conditions? Is that what you're talking about?
Talking about there are some things that are recognized as being of higher risk of corrosion, and they're already included in there.
That's correct. The first condition that Mr. Bettman stated was that the 4-year interval be applied outside of business districts while a 1-year interval apply inside business districts. And then that regulator stations and emergency valves be monitored for atmospheric corrosion when maintained or patrolled. And then that the last one is that the operator notify the PUC of hot spots where there's greater corrosion rates requiring monitoring more frequently than once every 3 years.
And I do, this is Commissioner Johnson, I do think what makes me feel a little bit better is, you know, as Mr. Davis talks about that 3.3 that I think Mr. Sullivan, you mentioned, we don't typically see, but that's the most aggressive. And even if you had the most aggressive for 4 years, you really are still within a window of safety.
That I would agree with that.
Any other questions, comments, or concerns? Hearing none, a motion? A motion in PS07-001 that today the commission approve the waiver as per staff's requests and conditions. Excuse me. Discussion. Commissioner Johnson.
Aye.
Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
And Commissioner Quebec votes aye. Thank you very much. The next item on the agenda is PS08-001. In the matter of the filing of the investigation of the natural gas incident on February 20th, 2008 on Montana Dakota Utility Company System and Pier. On September 3rd, 2008, staff filed an addendum in their initial report. MDU filed a request for access to confidential information on October 7th, and a settlement has been reached between the parties. But first of all, we'll turn to staff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is John Smith, this time on behalf of staff. As of, I think, Scott, are you still on there?
Yes, I am.
I believe as of about 3:30, quarter to 4 yesterday afternoon, that last statement in the blurb became correct. I think so. The thing is, I have not yet, because of that, the date and or the lateness of the time and all that, and the fact that the attorneys for the parties I was unable to get a hold of yesterday, we have not yet finalized an agreement, a written document that reflects the discussions between the parties over yesterday, and spent most of the day on that and the day before. So I was unable to get a hold of Mr. Kaneki or anyone yesterday. And so what I would ask on this item, so we have a chance to get a document finalized that reflects, I think, what the agreement is, I would request that if the commissioners would be to grant a continuance on this. And I'm going to recommend till sometime tomorrow, so we have a chance to get a document done, get it circulated to lawyers, and we can look it over. And then there is a side document too that's intended to go with the settlement, that's supposed to be initially prepared by SDIP, and that's the procedures they intend to follow on the gas venting that we've agreed to try to bring the pig in. And he is to get that done. I think Nathan, is that today? Is he going to get something done?
Tentatively, we should have a draft document by 1 o'clock.
Okay, great. So if we could, that's what I would ask of the commission. And the reason I'm asking for a continuance on the record here is so that we don't have a notice issue. You know, that would just be a continuation then of this particular notice public meeting.
All right. Questions?
Do you have a time certain, Mr. Smith?
I don't, and I think Chairman Hansen probably, and the parties may have want to weigh in on this too. I don't know if Gordy's on the phone or not. He's here in town, so I would assume he could probably be available, Gordon Woods. Maybe Mr. Kaneki, but I think Mr. Chairman Hansen, you have a conflict tomorrow during part of the day, is that correct?
I chair the Pipeline Safety Task Force, and we are we're finalizing the report tomorrow, and I anticipate it will take some time. Gordon Woods is on that committee as well, so certainly we'll be tied up. And if we're going to accomplish our task, it's going to be mid afternoon that I'd feel comfortable that we would probably be done.
What about Friday morning?
Well, that would be fine. I'll tell you the one reason is I the parties intend to accomplish this. The plan right now is on Monday, so I was just thinking the sooner we get the rules set, the better. But
Well, I hate having these scheduling discussions on because they're just so messy. I mean, to do it, you know, to waste everybody's time with it. The problem is that this is going to be a continuation. We do need a time certain. I mean, if we're talking Friday, maybe we don't continue the meeting, and maybe we just post it tomorrow when we know exactly when we want to do it on Friday.
That's possible, too. Chairman Hansen, would it be your belief that you would be done with your task force meeting by, say, 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon?
I was going to say 3 o'clock, yes. I would feel comfortable. We should be done with it, and we should be completed in a fashion that we would have ample time to get back to other meetings by 3 o'clock.
Okay, and if it happened to go longer, I mean, we could always convene the meeting as continued tomorrow. And then if there would be a necessity for some additional delay, we could always convene the meeting and just, you know.
If you wish to set the time for 3 o'clock, I think that we can make that.
I'd like to see it, just so we got a little slack time, too, just in case. You know, I'd be more comfortable with trying to get it done as soon as possible. But.
Well, let's go for 3 o'clock, then. Is that all right with folks?
Yeah, this is Brett Kanicki. That works for MDU.
Okay. Well, I have a motion in PS. Do I need a motion in PS0?
I think so, yeah.
08-001, that we issue continuance and this, that we continue this item and hold it over until 3 o'clock tomorrow. Okay. Vote on that. Commissioner Johnson?
Aye.
Commissioner Hansen?
Aye.
And I'll vote aye also. Thank you. In the next part of our meeting, we go to telecommunications. The first item under telecommunications is TC08-114 in the matter of the application of Central Telecom Long Distance for a certificate of authority. Central Telecom Long Distance Incorporated plans to provide these services throughout South Dakota. Today the question is, shall the commission grant a certificate of authority to Central Telecom Long Distance? Andrew Azar, have you joined us?
Yes, I have. Good morning, commissioners.
All right. Thank you. Andrew, why don't you go ahead?
Good morning, commissioners and staff. Thank you. My name is Andrew Isar. I'm with the regulatory firm of Miller Isar, and appearing here on behalf of our client, Central Telecom Long Distance, Inc. I should note that I am a regulatory consultant, and so I'm not appearing as legal counsel on behalf of our client. Our client has applied for, as you know, for a certificate of authority to provide resold non-facility-based inter-exchange services throughout the state of South Dakota. And I'm available to answer any questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. The applicant has met the requirements for granting the certificate of authority and has provided staff with all requested information. The applicant has requested a waiver of Administrative Rule 2010-24029, the requirement of providing the financial statements for the most recent 12-month period, and Administrative Rule 2010-24017 as it relates to the provision of a sales tax number. The applicant has agreed that it will not offer prepaid services, including prepaid calling cards, will not accept or require deposits or advance payments without prior approval of the commission. Staff recommends granting the waiver request and granting the certificate of authority with prepaid restrictions.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Thurber. Commission questions? Hearing none, motion?
I will move that in TC08-114 that the commission grant a COA to Central Telecom Long Distance Incorporated.
Thank you. Discussion? Commissioner Johnson, or discussion?
You know, they always want us to get on the record, so you might as well add, you know, with the waivers and restrictions recommended by staff.
Right.
All right. So just to clarify, Commissioner Hansen, yours is to grant the COA as per staff's recommendations, correct?
That's correct.
All right. Discussion? Anything? All right. Commissioner Johnson.
Aye.
Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
And I'll vote aye also. Next item number 2, TC08-115, in the matter of the application of Reliance Communications International Incorporated for a certificate of authority to provide inter-exchange telecommunication services in South Dakota. The applicant intends to operate throughout the entire state of South Dakota. The question today is, shall the commission grant the certificate of authority to Reliance Communications International Incorporated? Is there anyone on the line representing Reliance Communications? Hearing none, staff? Mr. Binder.
This is Tim Binder with staff. Reliance has filed in accordance with our administrative rules. We would recommend that we approve this COA. There's a couple caveats, though. They did request two waivers, which, in my opinion, don't apply. The first one is they request a waiver of the bond, which is not actually a requirement in this case. And, therefore, I don't think we should grant a waiver and not allow ourselves to go back there ever as a case. It's not going to change the end effect in this case. And the same is true of the second one. They requested a waiver of the 2010-2405, which is the alternative operator services. And, again, that's something that doesn't apply in this case at all, and therefore I don't really see a need to waive it. So with those two caveats, I do suggest or do recommend that the commission grant certificate authority to Reliance Communications International Incorporated.
All right. Anyone else wishing to comment on this? Commissioner, questions?
Mr. Binder, it's less common that we have people request COAs with prepaid service. Talk to us a little bit about the financial position, the condition of the company in generalities, if you can.
Yeah, definitely. This was one that was new for me as well, too, to not have any sort of restrictions on. They are offering prepaid and postpaid basis with credit cards, so basically offering calling cards. This company presented us with good financials just on a general basis, and go beyond just the company itself as well, too. They're actually a part of it's India's third largest telecommunications provider for cell phones and for other services. This branch themselves actually presented, this company itself has financials that are impeccable, I guess, for lack of better words, as far as the prepaid service goes. The other reason that I felt comfortable with this is a service that's been provided in several other states for some time now, and it's just expanding to our state as well, too. So it's not, I don't feel it presents any large risk to consumers in South Dakota at all. So.
Great, thank you.
All right. Any other questions? I just have one. The waiver of the bond and the waiver of the alternate operator services, you request that we do not grant those because they don't apply? Is that my understanding?
Yes, that's correct. My opinion on those is just unnecessary to waive those rules because they don't apply directly to this applicant at this time.
Okay. Thank you. Any other discussion? Motion?
I'll move that we grant the COA to Reliance Communications International Incorporated.
Thanks for staff, sir. Okay. Any discussion? Hearing none, Commissioner Johnson.
Aye.
Commissioner Hanson.
Aye.
Commissioner Kobach, vote aye also. On the next item, item number 3, TC08-116, in the matter of the filing by McLeod USA Telecommunications Service for approval of revisions to its access tariff number 3. The revised tariff has an issue date of October 9th, 2008, and a requested effective date of October 10th, 2008. The question today is, shall the commission approve the tariff revisions? Anyone from McLeod USA wishing to speak on this? We have Julie Dishman.
Yes, good morning. McLeod USA was acquired by Paytech Communications earlier this year, and we're just revising our tariff to reflect our DBA that was filed with the state of South Dakota.
Okay. Staff, Mr. Thurber.
Thank you, Commissioner. Besides changing the DBA, they also changed the title of the official responsible for the filing. These revisions were changes in text, but no change in rate rules or conditions. The commission has jurisdiction over this matter pursuant to SDCL Chapter 4931. Staff recommends approval with an effective date of October 10th as proposed by McLeod USA.
All right. Thank you. Commissioner, questions? Hearing none, motion? I'll motion in TC08-116 that the commission approve the tariff revisions. Discussion? Hearing none, Commissioner Johnson.
Aye.
Commissioner Hanson.
Excuse me, aye.
Aye. And Commissioner Kobach votes aye also. So that item passes. Item number four, TC08-117, in the matter of the filing for approval of an interconnection agreement between Brookings Municipal Utilities doing business as Swifttel Communications and Sprint Communications Company, LP. On October 14, 2008, the Commission received a filing for approval of an interconnection agreement between the two companies, and today the question is, shall the Commission approve this agreement, this interconnection agreement? First of all, we will go to Mary Sisek with Swifttel.
Yes, Sprint filed the agreement, but it is the agreement included between Sprint and Swifttel, and we just asked if the Commission approve it.
All right. And Mr. Brzorek, would you like to comment? I'm sorry, I should have gone to you first.
That's fine, Commissioner. I agree with Ms. Sisak's representation. This is just the agreement, the interconnection agreement that Swifttel and Sprint reached. Upon the Commission's approval of this agreement, Sprint then will file a motion to withdraw the arbitration, that's TC06176, which was the pending arbitration when Sprint and Swifttel reached the interconnection agreement.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Brzorek. Ms. Sema, would you like to comment?
Sure. Thanks, Mr. Commissioner. Just that we recommend approval. It's been properly filed and executed. It doesn't appear to contain discriminatory language. There were no comments filed. We recommend approval.
All right. And I just have, there was no interveners or anything like that?
None.
All right. Thank you. Any other questions? Motion?
I move that in TC08-117 that the Commission approve the interconnection agreement.
All right. Discussion? Hearing none, Commissioner Johnson.
Aye.
Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
And Commissioner Kobach votes aye also. Item number five, in the matter of the filing for approval of an amendment to an interconnection agreement in dockets TC08-118, 119, 120, and 121. All these dockets pertain to the Commission receiving a filing for an amendment to an interconnection agreement between Crest Corporation and McLeod USA Services. Today, the question is, shall the Commission approve the amendments to interconnection agreements in the above referenced dockets? First of all, we will go to Quest.
Mr. Commissioner, this is George Thompson from Quest. All of these amendments are fairly standard and I would hope non-controversial.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Anyone else wishing to comment on this? Verizon or Sprint? McLeod? If not, Commissioner questions? I'm sorry, staff. Kara.
Thank you. Staff agrees they are non-controversial. They were properly filed and executed. They don't contain discriminatory language. There were no comments filed, and staff recommends approval.
Thank you, Ms. Emma. Commissioner questions? Hearing none, Commissioner action?
I move the Commission approve the amendments to the interconnection agreements.
All right. Discussion? Hearing none, Commissioner Johnson.
Aye.
Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
And Commissioner Kobach votes aye also. Last item on the agenda in telecommunications is TC08-123 in the matter of the filing by XO Communications for approval of revisions in its access service tariff. The company has requested an effective date of November 11, 2008 for these tariff changes. There are two questions listed. I guess the first question is, shall the Commission grant intervention to any parties who have filed? And there are none, so we will answer the second question. Shall the Commission approve the tariff revisions? First of all, anyone from XO Communications wishing to comment? Okay. If not, Mr. Thurber?
Thank you, Commissioner. XO Communications filed the Commission for Commission approval revisions to its access service tariff. XO added to the description of its switch access service. These revisions were changes in text, but no changes in rate, rules, or conditions. The company has requested an effective date of November 11th. Staff recommends approval with an effective date of November 11th as proposed by Exo Communications.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Thurber. Commissioner, questions? Hearing none, action? Commission action, I will move on TC08-123 that the commission approve the tariff revisions. Discussion? Hearing none, Commissioner Johnson?
Aye.
Commissioner Hansen?
Aye.
And Commissioner Kovac votes aye also. Right now, I have on my watch that it is 23 minutes after 10, and we shall be in a short recess for 7 minutes, and we will reconvene to discuss the items in consumer affairs, namely CE08-001, 004, 005, and 006. Thank you.